The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Let it go, let it go, let it go. That's right, it's a festive special, and today's show has more Christmas spirit than Luis Suarez' trolley at Costco last Friday. We look back on Liverpool-Cardiff, some missiles but no dismissals as manager stays on. We ask, has Vincent Tan, angry man, decided not to say bye-bye to Malky Mackay, and wonder what'll happen when Liverpool and Suarez face Man City on Boxing Day. Elsewhere, Spurs at Southampton, Sherwood in charge, and he sure would like to stay that way, but what's all this Louis van Gaal business? There's Arsenal, Chelsea, and Everton going top four. Squeeze along there, we're climbing aboard the Ross Barkley bandwagon. Meanwhile, Europe heads off for its in no way sensible winter break with a major weekend of action. We round up all the news from the Milan derby to Bayern in Morocco to the latest from Spain. It's all here in this Football Weekly. Hey, what a special show today. James Horncastle's here.
Ho, 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 Jimbo.
Ho, 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 indeed. Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
Feeling the Christmas love, Jacob. And say hello to Banta Claus, it's Paul Doyle.
Hi.
Hi, indeed, Paul. Nice to see you. A lot of listeners have been missing you, saying, where's the Paul Doyle?
This time on a Monday morning bed is normally the answer.
Okay, so all right.
I'm not best pleased, to be honest.
All right, fair enough. Well, we'll try and make it worth your while. Also back, producer Ben, who's been on holiday. And he was just asking about the award we won, which I forgot to mention what it was. It was the FSF Award, the Football Supporters Federation. So, hey.
Did Luis Suarez interview you after you picked up that award?
No. Luis Suarez, we'll come on to him in a minute, because his incredible run of form continued, of course, on Saturday. But shall we start with Sunday's humdinger down at St Mary's, Southampton Spurs? Now, there's a lot of things written about Spurs on the basis of this 90 minutes. Jacob, I know you were all over this game.
Yeah.
Are there any things we can draw from it beyond the fact that Spurs got a win?
Well, that lineup from Tim Sherr was kind of like an Ozzy Ardiles tribute act. It was, you know, basically a 4-0-6. He played the opposite to Sam Allardyce's 4-6-0, basically. Just no real defensive midfielder in the team at all. He thought there's no one to win the ball back off Southampton, but it didn't really matter because Southampton, with all their players missing at the moment, weren't quite up to scratch, and the Spurs got a foothold in the game, and they attacked well, particularly in the second half when they could have scored 5 or 6, really. And the big thing for them was that Emmanuel Adebayor has had his kick up the backside, basically, and he's playing like he should be playing every week, because in his actual best form, he's one of the best strikers in the country.
I did like what Sherwood said about apparently to Adebayor beforehand. It was very kind of Redknapp revisited, in that he said, I've not had to G him up. I just said, there you go, Addy, go and play an attack. I want defenders to defend, midfielders to play midfield. It's a simple game.
Right. He probably said it with an arm around his shoulder as well.
But it did seem to be very reductive and sort of a complete removal from what we've become accustomed to from AVB. It's one extreme to the other, if you like, in that sense.
All right, is this a new dawn then? Is this a blueprint for the future for Spurs, or is it that Adebayor will traditionally give you, whenever there's a big change, he'll give you a couple of good
games? Well, yeah, I mean, they had two, you know, strikers who've gone for about £25 million in Soldado and Adebayor, and they played as you would expect players who've got those kind of fees to play, and they were too much for a Southampton defence missing, well, four of their first choice players. I think, you know, Luke Shaw was out, which meant that Danny Fox played, and Southampton fans aren't too fond of him. There's a bit of ironic applause, I think, when he was taken off in the second half. Jos Højvæld, who's an own goal machine, was at centre back instead of Font, and they've got Gazzaniga instead of Boric and Callum Chambers playing, so they were against a weakened back line. But Adebayor was very good, and Soldado was, he was just moving more than he has done in previous times. He had, you know, someone who can support him in attack. He could have had a hat-trick in the space of 5 minutes, Soldado.
If only he'd scored.
Yeah, but he did also, you know, he was a nuisance, and he set up Adebayor's first goal with the kind of cross and movement that you haven't really seen from him this season.
But he's played in a different position, is that right, this time?
Soldado, no, he's played in a 4-4-2, really, basically.
And, but he looked very wide from the limited bits.
He was just moving into the channels more than he has done. And Chris, yeah, but whether this is the way forward for Spurs, I mean, you not quite sure whether they can really get away with a midfield of, you know, Christian Eriksen in central midfield with no defensive midfielder. But what the big thing that I thought also came out of it was the young player who came on, Bentaleb, who was outstanding when he came on in the second half.
Right, and this is a major plus point for sure because he knows these players. He brought them through the academy. Yeah. He can reach for that young talent.
Yeah, no, and this guy, I don't think he played for Spurs before. 19, 18, and he came on for Dembele, who's a senior player, and he was brilliant.
Excellent. All right, well, what's the latest then on the situation going forward? Tim says, I don't want this job for 10 minutes.
Yeah, he said, well, hire me or lose me, basically.
Hire me or lose me.
On TalkSport the other day.
And how's that going to play with Daniel Levy, do you think?
Well, I kind of think that Levy might want him to get the job, but, you know.
It's kind of high stakes, isn't it? Which Levy likes, I think. It's like a meeting of minds.
Well, the other thing Sherwood keeps saying is he needs to talk about the philosophy at the club, which is a fair point, because they've just spent 100 million on loads of new players, and presumably when they bought those players, they envisaged them playing in a particular way. Presumably, AVB wasn't playing them in the way that he was supposed to. So they will want the new manager to play it in that way. Is that what Sherwood did yesterday? Probably not.
Right.
Given that it was a very midfield-heavy recruitment and there wasn't a huge emphasis on midfield.
So if they don't stay with Sherwood then, Van Gaal said that he wouldn't join before the summer. What are the options? Is it Glenn Hoddle that's been mentioned?
Yeah, Glenn Hoddle's mentioning himself.
Right.
Okay. I mean, Frank de Boer doesn't seem to want to leave Ajax. So
I guess there is some kind of continuity in that respect, because if you go for de Boer, you can't get de Boer, then maybe you go for Van Gaal. There is some continuity there. In fact, I think on AVB's desk there was a huge Louis Van Gaal book.
Really?
Yes, at Spurs. So he always cited him as, you know, his major influence rather than say Mourinho. So yeah, perhaps. Yeah, that you can see the logic in it,
right?
As opposed to
Van Gaal football, beyond dropping your trousers at half time, what does it involve, James?
It's just circulating the ball, isn't it? It's just, you know, pass, and all that.
Spurs, of course, know all about dropping their trousers. We've seen it at Man City quite recently. Can we read a lot? I hope we can, into Tim Sherwood's body language as he raced up and down the stands. First of all, I noticed that when he went to get a seat up in the terraces at St Mary's, he shook everybody's hand among the Spurs directors, apart from Baldini.
Mm. Apparently, there was a report that Baldini also offered to resign.
I completely believe that. Because he offered his resignation so many times at Roma in the last 2 years, didn't he? Whenever a manager went south, he was like, "Yes, I'm going to fall on this sword too." But considering how much we made of, you know, AVB's sort of body language, you know, his squatting sort of affectation, whatever, would Sherwood, you know, up in the stands, was he trying to get some kind of a helicopter view of things?
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah. And then he raced back down and started giving,
when they were losing.
It the full touchline mime scenario. And it was quite spirited to watch, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If you're a Spurs fan, you've got to love that, no?
I'm sure they do.
All right.
One thing also, I thought Adam Lallana was, even though they lost, Adam Lallana was, might have been, along with Adebayor, the best player on the pitch.
Right.
Yeah. That's the best I've seen him play.
Any reason for Saints to worry? There's still a whopping margin ahead of the relegation, but they've only had one win in the last nine.
Yeah, they haven't won in six. It all started with Boric's calamity against Arsenal, with when he let Giroud score that goal. But it's just really the injuries. They don't have the squad to cope with that. And also, Wanyama's out. Osvaldo wasn't in the squad yesterday. They just need their players back.
Right. Well, next up, Boxing Day indeed, Spurs will be hosting West Brom. Talk maybe a little bit about West Brom and their exciting 1-1 draw with Hull later on. But Saints are going to be at Cardiff, which brings us on to, nicely, the big game early on Saturday, which was, of course, Liverpool-Cardiff. A lot of attention on this fixture beforehand. First of all, because of the Suarez deal that preceded it. A lot of excitement from Liverpool fans about how he was going to be staying there for a couple of years now. But is that a correct reading of this new contract, do you think, Paul Dore?
Personally, I hope he does stay at Liverpool, just because I love watching him, so I want him to stay in the Premier League. Having said that, if Liverpool don't make the Champions League next year, I hope some kind of compulsory purchase order takes place.
Right.
So that Suarez is transplanted into a team in the Champions League, because that's where he belongs.
Where he belongs, yeah, indeed.
It's quite interesting that you've gone from Spurs to Liverpool, because in terms of, they sold Gareth Bale. They didn't really seem to put up much of a fight to try and keep him, whereas Liverpool, dug in and kept Suarez when they could have sold him. That's turned out really well for them. They're top of the table.
Top of the league, indeed.
Which is, you know,
at least until Arsenal-Chelsea on Monday night.
The thing about Suarez is he's just hit this peak of form now where it doesn't really matter what the opposition do. So the Norwich game a couple of weeks ago, they don't do too much wrong, Norwich, and then it was 0-0, they were holding them quite comfortably, and then Suarez scores a volley from 45 yards out. Well, the other day, Cardiff were playing quite well, and then Suarez just scores an outstanding goal.
That's why he's so good to watch. He's just a bringer of chaos. You don't know what he's going to do. He just shreds all opposition when he's on form.
29 goals in 26 games this year. 10 goals in December in the Premier League. More than any player has ever managed in a single month. The top scorer now in the top five European leagues. And this despite missing those first five games through suspension. Crikey, a lot of suggestions that the new contract does have a clause that will allow him to do one if they don't make top four, but they're looking pretty good for that. Everybody loved Michael Owen's description of Luis Suarez on Saturday. He's like an electric charge mouse. Have you ever seen an electric charge mouse? It was really similar to what he was doing. But are we, you know, Suarez, amazing. What about Henderson, though? What about Jordan Henderson? Are we, I noticed 365 saying that maybe we should be treating Henderson's revival in much the same terms we have Aaron Ramsey's incredible turnaround of form at Arsenal.
Yeah, he's adapted to that. That's the way he's been playing for England under-21s for about two, maybe 3 years. He's looked a man amongst boys and he's totally boss games at that level. But it's taken him time to reach that ability amongst the senior players, and now he does look really good. You can see why they got rid of Shelvey, for example, in the summer, because Henderson is showing himself to be a better player than Shelvey, even though Shelvey's having a good season as well, and a more likely heir to Steven Gerrard's throne than Shelvey probably is.
Interesting game it was against Cardiff on Saturday, with a complete turnaround at half time, because the Bluebirds came out, the in-blue on this occasion came out and looked a different side in the second half. What happened there?
Well, Liverpool have done that quite a few times this season. Their record in the second half of games after very good first half performances is quite poor. And Liverpool were a little bit flat and kind of got a foothold in the game. And, you know, one of those second chances had gone in after they'd scored. It might have been a lot more interesting than it turned out to be. But, you know, in the end, it sort of petered out into an easy win for them.
Right, and emotional scenes at the end as Marky Mackay salutes the Cardiff fans and, yes, also the Anfield faithful who were providing him a warm round of applause and what looked like his swan song for the Blue Birds. But no, hang on a second, what's all this? Vincent Tan says that he's going to stay. The crisis is averted for now. There might be a space for dialogue. What's going on?
Well, at least have the courage of your convictions. He seems reluctant to sack him, even though he's threatened to do just that.
You want him sacked, James Holmcastle? Or humbug?
Oh, no! I don't want Malcolm Mackay sacked. I wouldn't want anyone sacked. I wouldn't want you, Jimbo, sacked. I wouldn't want Paul sacked. I wouldn't want Jacob sacked. Yeah, I'd never wish that on anyone, particularly
this sounds quite threatening.
This time of year. Well, maybe that's the Vincent Tan approach, you know?
Right?
But I don't know. I think.
Is it just that the reality of Sven was too horrible to contemplate that even Vincent Tan had to backpedal at that point?
I think that would be magnificent. I think he'd get the coach he kind of deserves. You know, it'd be that it wouldn't be the coach the club deserves, but right. for Tan, who's so easy to parody. I mean, just the way he rocked up at Anfield in that kind of, you know, glasses, garb, high-waisted trousers again, leather gloves. Yeah, I mean, you could completely imagine him going into the dressing room, taking off a glove and just slapping someone around the face.
Yeah, underneath he'd have one of those metal hands which you can kind of take off and inflate.
Yeah, like in Bruce Lee. What is that?
Exactly. There? Yeah. Mr. Ham Man. Yeah. But Mr. Tam Man in this case. Yeah. You come straight out of a comic book. There we go. Yeah. Enter the Dragon, of course, younger listeners. Right, well, we don't know then who'll be in charge of Cardiff on Boxing Day when they host Southampton. But what about Liverpool and their trip on Boxing Day to the Etihad? Can they be, Paul Doyle, could they be, with Luis Suarez? You sigh wearily as I asked you to address this issue. Could Suarez be the element that allows somebody to finally take points off Man City at home?
Yeah, he obviously could, yeah. And especially as City are a little fragile defensively. And he could certainly exploit that, yeah. I think by the same token, obviously, City can exploit Liverpool's defence. And midfield is obviously going to be a crucial area.
Right.
And it'll be interesting to see how Henderson does against Touré.
Touré. And his free kicks. Four already this season.
He's very good at them.
Boy, isn't he? Isn't he? What do you think, Jacob? Make a call. Man City, Liverpool.
Man City, Liverpool. City probably have too much firepower for that. Liverpool defence, maybe. But at the same time, City's defending against Fulham was... It left something... It was a bit lacking, wasn't it?
It was, wasn't it? 4-2 that game. Gael Clichy at
right back instead of Pablo Zabaleta and Mika Richards, both injured. Experiment that didn't work. And perhaps we might see someone like James Milner there on Thursday.
City have goals coming out of them at both ends. That Vincent Kompany strike, extraordinary.
As a Leeds fan, that reminded me of Alan Smith. When Leeds went down, he did a very similar thing against Wolves, I think. There was a corner coming in, he scuffed it, and it went up and over him and into the corner. But I don't know. I think that Yaya Touré free kick was just aesthetically so pleasing. Yeah, for it to for the whip, the pace, for it to then just kiss the bar and just bounce down. That was doesn't really get much better than that.
No, indeed not.
Scott Murray last night was saying that that when Kompany's own goal went in, you just saw Joe Hart just thought, "Oh God, not again! I'm going to get the blame for this, aren't I? I'm back, and it's happened again." But he actually had quite a good game, Joe Hart, on back in the side. Made some good saves, particularly from Tarapt in the first half. So that was good to see.
Mm. But going back to what you were saying about goals in both ends.
Yes.
I thought it's quite funny that James Milner was saying afterwards that he'd just prefer a 1-0 every now and then. You know, he wanted to see more 2-0s, more 1-0s, you know, for Mancini kind of... yeah, going back to his roots, if you like. The Roy Hodgson kind of way.
Mm.
That's his kind of style of football, not this Pellegrini nonsense.
It's very much at odds with his public image, that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
that's not really happening. A few years ago, between the top sides, you know, it was the famous Valdano quote of, you know, shit on a stick when Liverpool and Chelsea played against each other with Rafa and Jose. But now
these days, more like diarrhea, isn't it?
But now, yeah, but we see a lot more attacking football between the big sides. And Wenger was saying this the other day, that there's a lot more offensive potential and sides are set up much more attacking than they were in the past. And City, if that's the case, then City, you know, would have to make them favourites simply because they do think they can, and they can score more than everybody else.
Yeah, it's interesting. An approach like the one we saw from Spurs at Southampton, what would have happened to them maybe a couple of years ago when defending was a little bit more of a priority? It does seem that teams are really focused on pushing forward, although maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, let's have a little bit of music and then we'll move on to more Premier League stuff. Oh, we nailed that, didn't we? Analysis, tick. This weekend, at the bottom, West Brom, they drew with Hull 1-1. Was that good? By either team? There's a point, wasn't it? Probably quite good. They moved a point further away from Dropsville.
Hmm.
Yeah. And next up, they're going to be... Ooh, they're hosting Man United. Hey, that's an interesting game, isn't it?
Steve Bruce.
I don't think he's ever beaten Man United since leaving.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. But Hull are terrific at home.
Yeah.
Not sure if they'll get Robbie Brady back for this game. Can't remember how long he was out for.
One of the best home records in the league.
Right. How about that? Mm. The best, of course, being Everton's. Terrific.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, well, Man United arriving off the back of a big win against West Ham, which I bet you saw, Jacob, because, you know, being... Exactly.
Saw a bit of it, yeah. Yeah. I think I saw until it was 2-0 on my feed, and then I couldn't be bothered with the stop-start nature of it.
Right.
I think it was basically game over, but it was another sparkling performance from Adnan Januzaj.
Right.
I think James Collins is sort of off in the direction of Leeds at the moment, still sliding, trying to stop him from scoring that goal. But, he's just a terrific talent.
No flash in the pan, Januzaj, I think.
No, he's quite complete, right? Basically, as a footballer.
Okay,
yeah.
This was without Van Persie. Rooney did play, and they just had too much for the Hammers.
And Welbeck scored again.
Yeah, and Welbeck scored again.
Mm. And that
good
was
goal.
Great flick to Rooney, and then a nice pass, and maybe from Welbeck we haven't seen the conviction to shoot first time in the past, but you know, it's a good finish.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And at Hull, I know it's early. I know we just come off the weekend. And I'm asking you to throw forward to Boxing Day. But what do you think?
Hard game.
Yeah. All right.
Well, they've got a quite favourable run of fixtures going through this period, haven't they? After when we're naysaying and all being doom and gloom about United after they lost back-to-back home games. You know, I think there was always a feeling that they could get out of it and get some momentum going through this sort of Christmas congestion. So I don't know. I'd expect them to get something out of there, even though because Hull have been, I mean, they keep things tight at the KC, but again, it's about winning it, swinging it 1-0 or something like that.
Right. You're going to be going to this game, James?
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I'm going back up to Yorkshire this week. Today, to go and spend Christmas with my family.
Right. What's the narrative of this game? Do you think Hull Man United?
I think there's a bit of obviously Bruce playing against his old club. Not obviously playing, coaching against his old club. Actually, when they came up the first time under Phil Brown, they have their record of just loaning a lot of players from Manchester United, youth players. You think of Fraser Campbell. You think of various number have come through there, and they seem to have done quite well for Hull. So Hull were a little bit of a feeder club of United's. Bruce just exploiting his contacts there in the Ferguson days. So
really used to be United, didn't he?
Yeah.
So interesting. Interesting. The thing about United, though, is they try and climb back up the table. They're still 6 points off the top four, and they do have a better run of fixtures. But the problem is, for them, the teams above them, Paul, teams like Newcastle, show no signs of slowing down. Everton, as well, of course, are now in the top four. But Newcastle, you were at Selhurst Park for the game against the Magpies.
Yeah, Newcastle look really good. And just on that point of how competitive it's looking at the top, it's one of the reasons why this January transfer window is going to be so interesting. Because there's a lot of teams probably realising that certain things are possible this season that they may not have envisaged even at the start of the season. So it's a question of do they take a gamble in January? And Newcastle have suggested that they are interested in recruiting in January, which they need, because that's probably the biggest barrier to them sustaining their push is the depth of their squad,
which
isn't as deep as a lot of the other teams. For example, Loic Remy has hit a bit of a barren patch at the moment. He hasn't scored in five now, even though he's still playing okay. But he hasn't scored in five, and they don't have someone who can come on and deliver goals from a centre-forward position in his place at the moment, because actually it's quite strange with them recently how their strikers tend to go on these amazing hot streaks that just suddenly dry up, like Papi Cissé, Demba Ba happened to as well. Which isn't to say that Remy isn't in terminal decline. It's probably just one of those patches he's going through. But they do need strength and depth in defence as well, where they've actually been very good. And in the last eight games or so, I think it's four, maybe five clean sheets they've kept, and they look really tight as Colaccini is back to his best. Mathieu Debuchy has finally discovered the form that he showed in France, and we all knew he was capable of, but he's adapted to the Premier League now, and in the last 2 months he's been excellent. And I suppose special mention to Mike Williamson, who's quite unheralded, but has been really excellent alongside Colaccini, and they've been very solid in defence. But so if they can add depth, then they can certainly challenge. I mean, in the last eight games, some of the scalps they've taken, they've beaten Chelsea, Man United, Spurs, and they have an excellent midfield comparable to any almost.
If they can hang on to Kabay.
Yeah, that's it, because there's a lot of teams.
Paris Saint-Germain, there's talk of them moving in with beaucoup de francs, or of course euros, as they're now using over there, interestingly enough. There, Newcastle are home to Stoke on Boxing Day. Stoke, who are having quite the renaissance there under Mark Hughes. Although I say renaissance, interested to see that Begovic to Crouch is still their second top pass combination. So,
well, if you have Crouch in your team, why not use him?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, well, he got the winner in this game. Exciting match, that one, Stoke against Villa. Are Villa in trouble? Let's see. They're still 6 points from the bottom three.
Yeah, but and Tottenham strikers have gone off the boil. Poor Christian Benteke. I don't know what's happened to them. Towards the end of last season, when Villa pulled clear of trouble, and a lot of people expected them to have a good season this season because of the potential of that front three of Agbonlahor, Wyman and Benteke, they were looking really good coming into the new season, but they all three of them have been injured in the early stages of the season, and they haven't picked up where they left off last season, and the team from front to back are really struggling. I mean, they're definitely relegation contenders.
Wow. Now, elsewhere in the whole battle at the bottom business, there was a 0-0 draw for Sunderland with Norwich, which actually brought Sunderland 1 point closer to safety, but was regarded very much as 2 points dropped by the Sunderland manager, Gus Poyet, or, as Jasper Lungu points out, we should pronounce it, Gus Poyet.
Like courgette.
Like courgette, but with a P. We're quite possibly now in the realms of people writing in with any kind of random nonsense they care to make up, and we'll just repeat it. But that might be it, courgette. Don't know about that. It's certainly there's a Y in there, which in the South America's often there. I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, that was a disappointment for Sunderland, wasn't it?
Shocking, he said.
Ooh.
He chewed his players out quite harshly in his post-match, saying that, you know, we needed too many touches and all that sort of thing. It's the kind of post-match press conference you would kind of expect from
Di Canio.
Di Canio.
Right.
Exactly. So,
did he ask them to spit in his face?
No, but I'm sure he could show them. I'm sure. Yeah, right. He did, didn't he?
Maybe he's having second thoughts about bringing the ketchup back.
Yeah.
Hmm.
There you go.
Possibly so. And next up, it's not going to get any easier for them because they're at Everton. Everton, who are looking to close off 2013 without a single defeat at Goodison Park. They've got this game and then Southampton.
Everton, where they never win. They're absolutely appalling.
Who, Sunderland?
Not Everton. Everton are very good at Goodison Park. But Sunderland are absolutely appalling there. I can't remember the last time they did win at Goodison. But, Ross Barkley was another amazing.
Ah, right. Well, let's talk about, Everton-Swansea. Well, Swansea-Everton at the weekend.
Yeah, another amazing performance. And one of the things that stands out for me is how two-footed he is. You know, sometimes you don't see that with young English players, but I think there was just a shot in the second half where he driven past players, and I think he is right footed, you know, predominantly, but just let off this cracking left footed shot for about 30 yards, which almost went in, and then in the end he scores that free kick, which maybe might have been saved if it hadn't hit the bar, but because it wasn't quite in the corner. But then he says afterwards, I don't really practice.
Yeah, that's what's exciting about him, isn't it? The fact that he doesn't look like a product of training in any way. He's just natural talent.
Yeah, there's so much talent there. The only thing about him is sometimes he hangs on to it a bit too much, but he'll learn when to release the pass and what the right decision should be. But, you know, Everton, Martinez has done a brilliant job there.
Right.
Yeah.
Moyes probably deserves credit as well.
He does, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he put together that defence and a lot of the players there are his.
Seamus Coleman,
yeah.
Was signed by Moyes for, I think,
£60,000. Yeah. I probably read that in your 10 things we learnt this week.
No, yep. No, you read it somewhere else.
Right.
But what an excellent signing. And he's probably the best right back in the league at the moment. Best going forward, anyway.
Right. Who in Fantasy Football League says, I'm not sure which version of, but Ben says he's actually statistically number one. I'm not sure who you'd be up against, because right back is always a problem area, isn't it?
I'm a big fan of Ivanovic.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Different type of fullback, but
very much
very
so.
Good.
James?
Yeah.
Best right back in the league? Boy, that's a tough one.
Zabaleta.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Zabaleta's a strong call.
Right.
Dadushi making strong calls at the moment as well.
Okay, now they're coming in. Yeah. Okay.
No one.
Right. And the producer Ben wants to say Glenn Johnson, but I think he's looking for laughs there.
So he's definitely the best English one.
Right.
Raphael.
Okay. Bingo. Right. Well, anyway, there you go. That's Everton, who are hosting Sunderland as they attempt to hang on to top four. And if Arsenal beat Chelsea, they will be top four going into that. Chelsea, of course, are just 1 point behind them, but with very much a game in hand.
As it stands,
yeah,
Everton are 2 points off the top.
So they are.
Yeah.
It's remarkable on Merseyside that, you know, Liverpool and Everton are so close. Well, one is top and one is so close to the top. It's just utterly bonkers this season.
All right. This podcast will be available to people kind of Monday afternoon. A lot of people will probably catch up with it after the Arsenal-Chelsea game, so let's just give them the pleasure of hearing how we get it wrong when we predict what's going to happen at the Emirates. Is Wenger finally going to get that first win over Mourinho? Paul?
No, I don't think so.
Really? Why?
I think Chelsea, although they've been quite erratic this season, have a tendency to pull out big results when they need them, whereas Arsenal are the opposite. They tend to flop when they really need a big result, as at Old Trafford, for example, earlier this season.
Man City as well. This time they're at home, though.
I know that, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they won. But
no, okay. But
put me on the spot, I'm going for a draw or a Chelsea victory.
All right, can you make a convincing argument for an Arsenal-Chelsea win, James? Is it very evenly matched, this one?
I think so. You go back to that Capital One Cup game, which Chelsea won quite easily. And again, you wonder about the psychological impact this might have in terms of, you know, as you mentioned, Arsenal losing against United, losing against City. You know, if they played sort of a big title rival, they haven't managed to get the result they've required. I think they'll probably look back with some regret at the Everton game when they drew 1-1 late on that Gilles, because they could have gone 7 points clear, I think, at that stage, which would have been much more of a cushion. And obviously they could go into this period in fourth place, couldn't they? So it's momentous for that very reason.
In terms of maintaining belief, Jacob.
I would like to say yes, and I think that Arsenal are a better, more settled team than Chelsea have been this season, and probably more of an identity to them. But he's never beaten Mourinho in 9 attempts, Wenger, and Chelsea just, they do have a bit of a hold psychologically, mentally, physically as well over Arsenal. At the same time, though, I don't rate this Chelsea midfield at all, and I think that Arsenal can impose themselves with the way they've been playing there this season.
Right. Ashley Cole won't be playing. Was that connected to the fact that he turned up at Arsenal's Christmas party?
Well, he's been out of the team for, 7 games, apart from that sympathy start against Stour, I think, which, you know, has led to some speculation about his future, really, which is quite interesting, because he continues to play Azpilicueta on that side when it's not his natural side, is it? So there's obviously something going on there, but we'll have to see.
All right.
I think although Mourinho sort of suggested he wasn't happy about Ashley Cole going to that, I wouldn't be surprised if he actually sent him to with instructions of things to say just to get inside the mind.
Wenger was asked what did it mean that he was there, and he said, "Oh, it just means that they have the same information about what the good restaurants are."
Yeah. Well, this all happened, of course, because Chelsea's Christmas party was cancelled after their defeat away at Sunderland, bizarrely, in the League Cup, the very self-same competition in which they'd beaten Arsenal earlier in the season. What does it all mean? I don't know. We'll take a quick bit of music, and then we'll be back with more.
To buy your copy of Tales from the Secret Footballer for just £6.50, that's 50% off the recommended retail price, head to The Guardian Bookshop at guardianbookshop.co.uk/footballtales and enter the offer code TALES. That's TALES. The offer's valid until the 24th of December.
Always fun to read the message boards, particularly at the moment when everyone's so keen to correct pronunciation. Here's ID long number. Nobody says indignation of wrongly pronounced foreign cities is matched by indignation of plain wrong advice about tea preparation. Never ever, says ID, etc., use boiling water. Now, this is a real shocker, because I always maintain that's crucial. You've got to hit the bag with the boiling water.
Yeah, so what's the alternative?
Well, you're a Yorkshireman as well, James, so... Of course, that's where tea comes from. Famously, grows on the slopes of the Dales.
Exactly. God's country with its own tea.
Right. As an aside, says ID, why is it not worth mentioning instant coffee, but you'll find to discuss the tea equivalent? Yeah, that's a fair shout. Guna4270 weighs in with this as well. Concerning tea, I worked for over 20 years in a tea factory. The tea tasters boil water in copper kettles and brew for 6 minutes. You get a better taste from a longer infusion. Ergo, steer clear of tea bags, because the leaves are cut smaller for a quicker infusion. That's why you can't leave a tea bag. It gets bitter, isn't it? Right, this is fascinating. Thanks so much, sir. How do you do your tea, Paul?
I'm a coffee man.
Are you?
Yeah.
Right. I must admit, I am too, but I like a cup of tea. And a good thing, too. My word. It was a big weekend in Europe, as the Bundesliga, Liga, Serie A, Ligue 1, they all basically signed off for Christmas. In the Bundesliga case, they won't be back till late January. God, How about that?
Bayern didn't play, but they won.
Hey, they were still winners. Because they did play on Saturday, but in Morocco, where they beat Raja or Raja, I'm really confused by now, a team from Casablanca anyway, and beat them. It was 2-0, wasn't it?
2-0, yeah.
2-0. So now they've won the World Club's Cup. That's five titles the Munchen side won in 2013. For Pep Guardiola, that's his third World Club Championship in three attempts, which is pretty extraordinary. And as a manager, he's now won 17 of the 23 tournaments he's been involved in. Beat that, as Filippo Maria Ricci was tweeting. Absolutely extraordinary. But as you mentioned, back home, they still prove winners, because even though they didn't play, they maintained a seven-point lead because Borussia lost at home, the third straight home defeat. That was against Hertha Berlin.
Bayer Leverkusen lost as well.
Bayer Leverkusen. Borussia Dortmund now are only 2 points ahead of Wolfsburg. Because, yeah, people have been writing about that one as well. So, you know, it's getting a bit of a concern. Total collapse of Dortmund.
Yeah. I mean, again, that goes down to the many injuries that they've had and competing on so many fronts and whatnot. But I suspect they might bring someone in over in the January transfer window. Mm. Maybe not spend a lot of money. But, again, I think they do need to sort of shore things up again, because the injuries have compromised their, well, not only their title challenge, but what the competition they remain in. So I'll be interested to see what happens there over the next month.
Certainly will. Certainly will. In France, Monaco lost. They'd had four straight wins without Falcao, who was off with this mystery thigh ailment. As soon as he comes back in, bingo, they lose to a bottom three side, Valenciennes, with Falcao taking and missing a penalty, crucially. And a lot of his performance was described as how? Atrocious? Abysmal?
Yeah, all of the above.
Right. Other nasty words beginning with A. Apathetic, probably that was there as well. And a lot of suggestions that he is plain interested in a move away from the principality in January. But we don't know where to, or even if Monaco will let him go. PSG, meanwhile, Sunday night, drew 2-2 in a big top three battle, which is very exciting, which means it's still quite tight at the top in France. And down at the bottom, former champions Montpellier still just one place outside the bottom three. Paul, how extraordinary are you to see them down there?
I'm very extraordinary.
Yeah, it's just remarkable, isn't it?
Well, that team has sort of been dismantled since they won that league championship. You think of Olivier Giroud, who's gone to Arsenal. They lost his sort of wingman, if you like, Younes Belhanda, who went to Dynamo Kiev. And they've just signed Mbaye Niang on loan from Milan to help score them goals, because they haven't scored hardly any so far this season, and Niang looks like the guy who's going to get the goals from him. He hasn't scored a league goal in 18 months, so
right.
It's not the most encouraging signing, I don't think, for what they need anyway.
There was a lot of excitement at Milan about him, even at the start of this season, but he just hasn't come together, has it?
There was. He's been hyped from a very young age. I mean, he's still a teenager now, and I think it's just unfortunate at Milan. Yeah, there's not a lot of patience for young players. He hasn't always played in the position that I think he would have liked. He's often played out wide, and that hasn't been conducive to him scoring goals. I think he's remembered for that, missing that chance at the Nou Camp for Milan against Barca when he hit the post. And if they'd scored then, it would have been 3-1 on aggregate, but they would have had a
who knows
away
what
goal.
Could have happened.
Who knows?
An away goal. Aye. Well, let's just stick with Italy then, because of course Milan had their own big game on Sunday night. It was the derby with Inter. And it was pretty dire, actually, wasn't it, James?
Well, beforehand, it was billed as the Derby dell'Austerità, the austerity derby, because I think in the history of the derby, the two midfields on show last night were some of the poorest. You know, you think of Inter's, which was an old Javier Zanetti, Ernesto Bancambiaso, and Safia Taider. You then looked at Milan's, which was Muntari, Poli, and I can't remember now, but yeah, it's La Scala del Calcio, the Scala of football, yeah, the opera house in Milan. Usually instruments you see on show there are violins, and one of the editorialists in Gazette said, you know, they were playing with pots and pans of instruments.
I like it.
Which is fairly accurate. Milan, I think, should have won, because in the first half they played much better football. They had more of the ball, several chances, couldn't convert them. They flagged in the second half. Inter came back into it. I mean, they should have had a penalty before they actually took the lead. Late on. And Rodrigo Palacio, to be honest, his goal was the best thing about the night. It was one sort of outstanding moment in a number of other forgettable ones. Yeah, a back-heeled goal. And I think Inter have not lost in their last four derbies, which is the longest run Milan have had without a win in this fixture since 1999. So,
right.
Does very little for their position in the table.
Indeed. The game witnessed 248 mislaid passes in 90 minutes. It's quite an interesting stat, that, isn't it? 248.
Oh, that's the other member of Milan's midfield, is Nigel de Jong, who, interestingly enough, is built a reputation for himself as not a destroyer but a creator at Milan. He's played in sort of Pirlo's position. He's made more, attempted more passes than anyone else in Serie A this season.
Really?
But I mean, you don't want him to be the guy building your play, really, do you?
He makes de Jong decisions in a real,
he does.
Real sense. You mentioned Milan's position. They're down in 13th, and while Inter, with the 3 points, move up to just 5 points off the top three in a potential return to the Champions League, Milan are now just 5 points above the bottom three. Ay, 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 ay.
Yeah, I think this is their lowest position since, at this stage of the season, since they were relegated back in, what, 82? But, I mean, this team will be refreshed in January because they've got Keisuke Honda coming in, Adil Rami, a number of players will be back from injury. We saw Pazzini last night, De Sciglio is back, and so is El Shaarawy. And to be honest, I think they played better than Inter. They played the better football on the night, just only for like 45 minutes, and that's what cost them, really.
All right, well, both Roma and Juve signed off for the year with big wins, 4 goals apiece for those two sides. They are the top two in Italy, Juve 5 points ahead of Roma. What's the first game back from the winter break, James?
It's Juve-Roma.
Wow. January the 5th. Well, in European terms, that just leaves Spain, and the man to tell us all about the latest there is Sid Lowe.
Hello, Jimbo. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm very well. Are you on a train?
No, I'm not, but I do feel like I'm about to buy a first-class ticket to Nottingham, please.
Why?
Sorry, that reference is wasted on you. It's the old tunes advert. I've got a bit of a nasal noise going on. Right. Ticket to Nottingham, please.
Right, now it comes flooding back. Repressed memories, Sid. Repressed memories. Brilliant. Okay,
well, if that's the most repressed of your memories, then you've lived a good life, Jimbo.
I don't know, because the others, if they're more
well
repressed. Yeah.
True, yeah.
Who can say? But I'm sorry to hear about your nasal misfortunes there, but you sound pretty good at this end.
Oh, that's good. Okay, yeah. Good.
It lends your voice an attractive timbre, I would say. Anyway, now, did you go to the Valencia-Real Madrid game?
No, I was in Madrid at the Getafe Barcelona.
Ooh.
Which was pretty tasty as well, yeah.
Boy, wasn't it, though? Barcelona, what, 2-0 down inside the first 15 minutes?
Barcelona 2-0 down. I'll give you the minutes now. Barcelona 2-0 down for 14 minutes, yeah.
Wow.
And they looked awful at that point as well. And you, watching it, you thought, God, they're going to concede some more. Because, I mean, afterwards, you know, inevitably everyone's pointing at Piqué and Mascherano, the two centre-backs. But it doesn't help that they were the only two defenders, that both full-backs were a good 15 or 20 metres further forward than them. And they just looked like they were going to get torn apart every time that Getafe got the ball. But then they played really, really well. I mean, it wasn't just that they came back because they got a couple of spawning goals and everything. I think it's the best I've seen Barcelona play this year.
Really? Even though they didn't have Messi? And am I right in saying they didn't have Neymar either?
No Messi, no Neymar. And also no Xavi Hernandez. And of course, no Victor Valdes. And so they had Pinto in goal, who's increasingly comic.
All right. And speaking of Pinto, Pedro was a big player for them with a hat trick. Is he now their top scorer for the season or something crazy?
He is their top scorer for the season. Yeah,
Sid, what's going on? Pedro, top scorer.
13 overall.
Crazy. They have their best game of the season without Neymar and Messi. Pedro's their top scorer.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose Pedro being their top scorer is perhaps not that much of a surprise in the sense that Messi's been injured a lot. They've been a team where Messi's got always such a huge proportion of their goals. Beyond him, although he'd had a kind of difficult start to the season, to the extent that people were actually talking about him moving on, Pedro's always been someone who scores a lot of goals. And it was quite funny at half-time, and I promise you I haven't set this up. I picked up the papers and read, obviously, some of them in the morning, but not all of them. And at half-time in the Getafe game, I started having a flick for El Pais, and there was this big article basically about how Pedro was the man they were going to need to score the goals today, and he just scored a 9-minute hat trick.
Wow.
I thought, there you go, there's a newspaper nailing it.
Something
that, of course, never happens to us at The Guardian.
Well, I don't know about that. Newspaper of the year, very much at the very exciting FSF.
Part of the year, I believe,
very much so, Sid, and congratulations for your part in that. And, that's terrific. So is Tata Martino, is he quietly ushering a new a Barcelona 3.0?
Well, I mean, there's still the debates about the way they play, although, say, yesterday they were very, very good. There's still some things that he's clearly doing slightly differently. And one of the things that really struck me yesterday, and it struck me a lot all season, but sitting there yesterday, partly because the press seats at Getafe are in a really nice position, they're really low down, you get a really clear sense of not just of what players do, but you can almost see it coming. You can see their intentions earlier. And the obsession with the diagonal out to the right or the left, sort of 30, 40-yard passes, particularly from Mascherano and Piquet, was really, really striking. Martino did say afterwards that he admitted that there are things they've got to sort out, in particular their ability from lateral free kicks and from corners where they're out-jumped and you know, beaten to the ball time and time again. He said yesterday that Getafe are a taller team than us and there's not much we can do about that. I suppose the answer would be, well, how about buying a centre-back who's slightly taller than Mascherano?
Well, there is that. Now, meantime, the other exciting news was down at the Mestalla as Valencia ran Real Madrid pretty close, didn't they?
Yeah, 3-2, and Valencia, I thought, were probably the better side. I was looking at statistics earlier. I think the shot count is exactly the same for both. Jesse got the winner quite late on. I'll just check the minute for you. In the 81st. And actually, Madrid hadn't done very much to get themselves back into the game, although both Jesse and Carvajal, who were Ancelotti's changes on the right-hand side, both played pretty well. Jesse's goal, I think the keeper makes a really, really bad mess of it, but it's an important goal for him, and I think he's going to be a really good player. One of the things I like about him is he's cocky. There's a real ballsiness to him. He's not frightened of anyone. He runs at people. He clearly knows that he's very talented, and so he doesn't hold back. And it was a really, really big goal because, you know, Madrid are anyway 5 points behind, so 7 points behind going into Christmas break. And Jesse said last night, I think his phrase was, it wouldn't necessarily have been goodbye, but we would have been too far away from the top.
Right. Okay, well, the top is currently Barcelona ahead of Atletico Madrid, but only on... Well, their goal difference is 37, Atletico Madrid's is 35. Now, what about this Valencia business? Talk of a €400 million offer from Peter Lim, the fellow who wanted to buy Liverpool a few years back.
Yeah, and this is something that it's been boiling up for a while. This Bankia, the bank that Valencia owed money to, basically put Valencia up for sale because they've effectively become the owners. Although strictly speaking, I think in legal terms they may not be, but they effectively are. And they're looking for someone to buy the club. There's been discussions for a while, and yesterday Amadeo Salvo, the president of Valencia, said that they've got a bid. He didn't say how big, but he said it was bigger than €250 million, and he said it was amongst the top three bids for a club ever in history. Mm. Now, ruling out Manchester United for reasons I don't fully understand, the suggestion is that this makes it bigger than, I think it's Man City, and I can't remember who the other one is, but anyway, it would put it in the region of somewhere between €250 and €350 million. In total, and of course what it basically means is taking on the debt, which is around about €250 million in total, but I imagine he'll get a deal on that, won't have to pay the whole lot, promising to put forward money to make sure that they finish building the stadium that's been standing there unbuilt for the last, 4 years or something, promising €40 million for signings, possibly even in the winter transfer window, although I'm not sure whether they'll have the time to get everything through quick enough to be able to do that. And Amadeo Salvo, the president, came out yesterday and said, this is a brilliant bid. It's the best we could ever hope for. This is fantastic news. Now, of course, one of the reasons for that is that Amadeo Salvo is the guy that's brought this bid to the table. Presumably, there's a financial reward for him for bringing this bid to the table. And he and his board will continue with Peter Lim. So, of course, he's very keen for this bid to be the one that goes through. But Bankia think that they've got two or three other possibilities as well, although it's difficult to imagine they will be as big as this. Peter Lim's given a deadline to, I think, the 15th of January to see this through. But, I mean, you kind of get caught in two minds a little bit, don't you? In that there's the excitement of there being another really big Spanish club and someone who could compete, and maybe Valencia not having to sell their best players in the future. But you always wonder quite where this will go.
All right. Well, producer Ben wants you to go out on a limb and right.
Well, someone did point out to me, Jimbo, yesterday, that if Oviedo get into the first division, we could have Lim against Slim at some stage.
Hey!
And apologies, by the way, because Stella just bought me a tennis ball, so I think we might get some barking any minute now.
All right, Sid. Bingo. That's it. Super stuff. Hope your nose gets better. Hope you have a very Feliz Navidad. When does the season start again?
The season starts on the weekend of Three Kings, so 4th, 5th and 6th of January.
Right, okay. Back then. Okay. Just the 1 week off.
Well, they celebrate. The presents here are traditionally given out when the Three Kings arrived on Epiphany. I think, right. I believe it's called, and they turn up and give whatever it is, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, whatever myrrh is. Apparently, it's a kind of orangey resin.
Yeah, or
I don't know why that matters.
Or if you've been bad, Sid, do you get a lump of coal?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Same as in Italy. Same as in Italy, where it's a La Befana, which is the
little witch,
who arrives and either leaves you prezzies in a, you know, a bit like our, you know, the English kind of stocking, or a lump of coal. There you go.
How about that?
How about that, eh? All right, well, super stuff. Have a happy Christmas then, Sid.
I will try. Have a great Christmas.
You too. You too. Yeah, and very much happy holiday stroke festive period to everybody. James Horncastle.
To you too.
You're already festive. Jump it up. Nice one. Jacob Steinberg.
To you too.
Thank you very much. And you too, Paul Doyle.
And to you.
Nice one. Producer Ben, you listeners. We'll be back a little bit later after Christmas because obviously all those games are taking place on Thursday, Boxing Day. So Friday morning, make a date to join us for Football Weekly Extra. Super stuff. Bye for now from all of us here.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.